Voices Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on, Fighting Unemployment and Poverty, the Evergreen Laundry and Worker Cooperatives in Cleveland, Ohio. But first,
Argentina, what a real labor movement looks like.
The economic collapse in Argentina has created a new labor movement for dignity and control over the work process and democratization of communities.
Recently, the Kraft Food Workers Insurgent Union successfully fought firings with a strike and plant occupation, which received mass community and labor support despite violent state repression.
The United Education Workers, a militant worker-led union, struck for living wages, closing all schools in the Buenos Aires region to resist the government's austerity plan. Workers have also shut down the Buenos Aires subway system, suspended major construction projects, and defended wages against government cutbacks.
The Picoteros, unemployed and low-wage worker movements, are successfully staging mass actions, including blocking major roads and highways, even as police brutality grows. We're joined by Marina Cabat, professor of Argentinian history at the University of Buenos Aires and coordinator of the Working Class Studies Workshop, Center for the Study and Investigation of Social Sciences, and Emmanuel Ness, professor at Brooklyn College, CUNY, and author of the International Encyclopedia of Revolution and Protest, 1500 to the Present.
And I can't think of better people than to have Manny and Marina with us to think about what a real labor movement is looking like. And I want to begin with the context for what has been happening in Argentina, which is a mass, socially active and conscious labor movement. Set the stage for us. Manny, do you want to? And of course, Marina, welcome. And it's lovely to have you with us.
Thank you, Manny.
Marina, this is Manny. How are you doing?
How are you, Manny?
Pretty well. Having just returned from Argentina, I sensed something very important, and that is a highly militant and radicalized working class. And I was wondering if you could comment on why that is happening. Is this an extension of the world financial collapse? Is this a highly educated workers' movement? I'm wondering if you could maybe comment on that.
I think this is related to the both issues. It is related to the global crisis, and it is related to a workers' movement with a huge tradition and well-educated movement that we are seeing today, the taking over of factories, the solidarity between the workers' union and unemployment union, was born in the 90s and is shown to light at the Argentinian crisis in 2001. In the following years, it was a little decline of this movement, but with the crisis in the last 2 years, it has reborn, and all the currents that participated in the 2001 crisis are present now. They are stronger now.
Yes, maybe you could talk about the major labor insurgencies that have taken place at Kraft and, very importantly and significantly, the teachers' union in the Buenos Aires area.
Well, the teachers' unions is a very important union, and it has been developing since the 2001 crisis with important struggles, not only strike, but also they have cut routes, they have many block roads in order to win their rights. And they have won higher salaries after those struggles.
And the Kraft Food struggle, that also is a recent struggle in which there was a victory. If you could give us an analysis of that.
Yes, that's Kraft Foods. This enterprise employs near 3,000 workers. Recently, the firm has fired nearly 200 workers, including delegates and activists, and the workers went on strike. They occupied the factory, and they received the solidarity from unemployment movement, students' movement, block roads and demonstrations, and in spite of strong repression, they were occupying the factory and they were evicted by the police in a very violent way. They finally won the conflict because of this solidarity and the way they continue the fight.
You say in a very cursory manner, violent reprisal from the government, but I don't think we have a very good sense of exactly how aggressive and repressive the government was. So if you could address that a bit more, and then also, of course, tell us about the kind of consciousness that spurred on the workers to have the level of unity in the face of aggression by the government.
Well, when I said violent repression, I was referring to the intervention of the police and the army also that entered the factory that was occupied by the workers, the police with their horses, and they shot with guns and with real bullets to the people that were demonstrating there. And they captured militants and they converted the factory in a police agency where they kept the people from near a day without contact to the press, to the lawyers, to other people from the movement. So they militarized the factory.
Marina, I just want to say that it seems to be growth in poverty in Argentina. 20% of the population is unemployed. 50% live under the poverty rate. And, of course, an educated population, highly professional workers are out of work or working for free and so forth. Do you sense some kind of alternative? My sense was that workers and the mass population really are looking for something different, more so than almost anywhere else in Latin America.
They are looking for something different, and they are offered something different. Recently, Mimi asked me about how this conscious growth. It is related to the struggle that the workers have protagonized the last 10 years, but it comes too from the work of left political parties that have participated and have offered a choice to people, a choice to organize other way, to organize in a different way that the bureaucratic unions usually do, and to fight for more important changes in society. That intervention has been very important in this arise of consciousness.
Manny, when you were writing to us from Argentina about the conference you were at and pitching this story to us to do a piece on Argentina, you kept on referring to insurgent unions, democratic unions, left unions, unions that were different. It seemed as if there was a struggle within the labor movement itself in Argentina, and this is arising out of that. Do you want to take off on that, and perhaps, Maureen, if you could talk about also what's happening within the labor movement that's producing these results?
Yes, we have a very strong and historic labor movement, but in the last 20, 30 years, bureaucratic unions were sometimes corrupted, sometimes the best leaders were disappeared by the military government. So a new union movement was needed to arise to be able to develop new struggles. And, well, there's a strong bureaucratic unions that have consented the growing in unemployment, that has consented the rationalizations in firms and weakened the destroyment of labor conditions. And this new labor movement, more related to left movement, more related to direct action, is recovering the best tradition of workers' movement in Argentina. And It's a strong fight in every union against new activists and old bureaucratic leaders that sometimes need corruption or government support to remain where they are.
I was really struck by the rank and file activity amongst a number of the unions, particularly the teachers and the craft workers, where, in fact, the power seemed to flow up and not down. And I think this is really what you're referring to with respect to the bureaucratized labor movements that formed under Peronism and the military regimes. I think the other factor is the student and faculty education programs that Réseau y Revolution, one of the organizations that you have been integral to have promoted. Maybe you want to talk a bit about that?
As an organization in Reason and Revolution, we try to help develop this movement. We work with teachers. Teachers are very mobilized and they have a big conscience of social problems. They teach to child whose fathers are unemployed, who go to schools to eat, and they have a very high conscience. But sometimes they say, we want to teach reality to our students, and we need textbooks to tell them the truth about society, about workers' movement, and they didn't have any material to do this. So one of the things Reason and Revolution does is to give these teachers courses. We give them courses in the union places so they can have another vision of history, society, and we publish books about economic crisis, about the history of workers' movement in Argentina, so they can use in their classes to develop conscience between the students, too. That's something that teachers are very willing to do.
A little different than many of our education processes here, where we seem to want to move students as far away from the issues of work and working class and poverty in any sense. The aspiration is towards elitism and to capitalism, of course. But what I was interested in, there's the picateros, which Ken mentioned in the opening, which are movements of really the most low-wage workers and also the unemployed. Tell us about how that fits into the social upheaval and class consciousness that has emerged, and not has emerged, but that is seen recently in Argentina.
An important point in the rise of class conscious is the fight against the divisions that bourgeoisie tries to impose to the working class. When the bourgeoisie obtains a division between employed workers or unemployed workers, make them fight from each other for the jobs, they win because that division is useful for them. What the Picateros movement have achieved is that has gathered the fight of employed and unemployed people, making them fight together against capital, not fight each other. The Picateros movement was born in the middle 90s. It is composed mostly by unemployed people. As they are unemployed, what they do is not go on strike, but to do block roads. They have won, subsided. In Argentina, there were, until a few years ago, there were no unemployment insurance. There was no unemployment insurance in a country that in 2001 there was 40% of unemployment rate. So this movement was very important to achieve this, and it created a big solidarity from occupied and unoccupied workers. We have seen that in craft conflict, but in any other place. When factories were taken, there's a big, important movement of taken factories. They received the solidarity of Picateros movement, and that's a movement that mobilized thousands of people. So it's a very important support to any conflict because it prevents the occupied factories from evictions. It's a big support to any worker who is on strike or who has occupied factory.
And Manny, you seem to get the last word. We've only got about a minute left, and maybe if you could also just mention in that minute the role of co-ops, which a million workers are part of.
I had the opportunity to visit a number of cooperatives, thanks to Marina and others at Raison de Revolution, and I was taken by the degree to which workers feel that working at a cooperative, even in a capitalist society, and let's make no mistake about it, that Argentina is a capitalist society, even though many people would like to see socialism there, and that, in fact, these workers want more power. And one of the terrible factors is that the government, which is a capitalist government, is supporting the private enterprises and not the cooperatives, but yet there seems to be a tremendous amount of consolidation of support for cooperatives. I suppose that's how you take it, Marina, but I'm not sure.
Well, we see our attention turning more and more, in the best sense, to Latin America, where we have so many lessons to learn from so many of the different countries, and today from Argentina, as we look at its working class, from its employed workers in craft, and I don't mean craft food sectors, to people in the professions and academic sectors, to the unemployed, to, as Ken said, more than a million people who are immersed in cooperative movements taking over and running the factories.
Continuing to.
So we have a lot more, and I hope that in this new year soon to be upon us that Marina Cabat will come back and we can find out more. And at, of course, Manny Ness, who isn't kidding when he said that he has written about the history, really, of revolution from 1500, right?
Well, Marina had no small part in that.
To the present. So we've got a lot to learn from both of you to stimulate our labor movement, our working class consciousness, and take our proper place in the society. Not the main street, but the whole street. Marina, it's been a pleasure. Manny Ness, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Una mala negrita se le sale la piel la cunita y la negra merced ya no sabe qué hacer. Tu drume negrita que yo va a comprar nueva cunita que va a tener capitel. Y va a tener cascabel. Si tú drume, yo te traigo un mamá y bien colorada. Si tú drume, yo te traigo un babalá que va a tener un pa.
Fabulous late Mercedes Sosa, whose voice will resonate for as long as we are there to listen to it. A brilliant Argentinian activist and songstress. Well, we've got some more things to talk about.
Now, fighting unemployment and poverty, the Evergreen Laundry and Worker Cooperatives in Cleveland, Ohio. Something important is happening in Cleveland. With the opening of the Evergreen Cooperative Laundry on October 21st, a worker-owned commercial-scale green business based in the Glenville neighborhood, one of the most severely disinvested areas in Cleveland. Mayor Frank Jackson called the laundry a model for how we can put our people back to work and rebuild our community. This new model for economic development was inspired by the network of worker cooperatives in Mondragon, Spain. It is first in a network of worker cooperatives that is being launched in the city by the Evergreen Cooperative Initiative.
Cooperatives is a network of employee-owned businesses. We are looking at a new paradigm for creating wealth in the Cleveland community. We will create a network of for-profit businesses that will hire from the neighborhoods, and the employees will own the businesses that are created.
This can't be just another initiative. I think for all of us, we want this to have meaning and scale and to be transformative, and it's just that simple.
Because this is more than a job, this is an ownership opportunity.
Having people able to participate in the creation and access to wealth that would normally be excluded is really the best part of this.
I envision being one of the owners to make the decisions about Evergreen and expanding.
That roots these projects in the community long term.
This is opportunity program. You know, this is not me getting back into a work habit or something like that. This is opportunity for me to get ahead.
It isn't just a job. It is their future long term. And we think that can really help bring about some positive change in the neighborhood.
I had some good people out there that believed in me, and they gave me a second chance. And so I can plan for my future now.
They are really willing to put the hard work necessary to make a difference in their own lives and the lives of their families.
They're revitalizing their neighborhood and taking ownership of their future.
We are investing through our purchase of services in the employees who will end up owning the businesses.
Over the next 3 to 4 years, we think we can create somewhere 500, 600 jobs in these low-income neighborhoods of Purdue University Circle.
What we're doing is catalyzing something. We're catalyzing, you know, a whole new grouping of companies.
In order for people to be truly vested in their community, they have to have ownership in the community. And ownership requires wealth.
That's not construction, that's not salaries of their staff, that is to purchase food, it's to outsource housekeeping, those that do that, and it's for things like laundry.
We're market-driven, but instead of being investor-driven as well, we're worker-owner-driven. We determine pretty accurately that there's 250 million pounds of healthcare bed linens available annually.
With recent legislation, Ohio has a mandate to create 60 megs of solar generating capacity in the year 2012. And right now there's two.
We're targeting several megawatts over the next couple of years, and you know that's on the order of nothing that's been done in Ohio to date.
It's going to be a great day to be knowing that we are helping to generate some power in a clean, environmentally responsible way.
We're talking about a 5.5-acre greenhouse that will produce about 5 to 6 million heads of lettuce annually and another 300,000 pounds of herbs annually.
The only way that the employees will generate any personal wealth is from the business being profitable.
The bottom line is, we still have to produce a quality product, we have to keep our customers happy, and we have to continue to gain revenue.
This is a laboratory for a new kind of economic development.
It's actually a career, which is one of the reasons that I wanted to be involved with it, because it's not just a job.
this is different. It is higher risk. It's not based upon the social service model, but the business model and the co-op ownership model.
It could serve as a model not just here, but other places in the same way it helped in Spain. It could be that here too.
It offers a bootstrap strategy for pulling yourself up with your own resources.
As this company expands, so do your wealth.
Lesson in a week time, learn how to run everything in here. And also teach other people what I've learned.
You know, we're not asking for dollars to stop at one company or two companies. If we can keep going to 20 and 30 companies and get to the scale that they experienced in Mondragon, that's, I think, one definition of success.
In 5 years, where this is going to go, I think most cities is going to jump on or want to look at what we're doing here and use us as a model.
Cleveland wants to be where the world is going, not where the world is.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.